Right, I have one turn to make an introduction. Great pleasure to introduce Gary Lowell to you. And just like Gary turned out to be the star of the Ring Surveying International Press. It was actually super cool. And he made a video of how to survey wood floats, which we showed. Gary said, I don't particularly want to be live on the thing, but I'm going to make this video, and he made a fantastic video. So we think you're super cool. Right. Over to you. Thank you, Gary.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's I'm quite honored to be here. I am Gary Lowell. I own and operate Lowell Boats in Greensboro, North Carolina, which is not on the coast of anything or not near any water. But that's where I live, so they bring the boats to me. I am fortunate to teach at the Wooden Boat School up in Maine, as well as at Lowell's Boat Shop in Amesbury, Mass., which is the oldest operating boat shop in the country, starting in 1793. So I get to say that I'm a relative of those guys, which is kind of cool. I've got a couple of presentations on the work that I do, just so you see some of the work I do, and then I have put together some tips on surveying or inspecting wooden boats, particularly smaller boats, 50 feet and less, trailerable runabouts that occasionally you might get a chance to work on or get a call for. Before I start, does anybody ever get a call to survey a wooden boat? So they're still out there. Well, that's good to hear. Okay. Let's see if I can do this right. This is my, let me know if you can't hear me and I'll come back around to, closer to the mic. Sorry, operator error. Ideally. Okay. A lot of the work I do is what we call classic runabouts. I do, you know, the Chris-Crafts, mahogany runabouts, lap strake boats, smaller vessels, but I also get to do real boats. That was kind of a joke. Okay. Here's I've got a little bit of some of the more interesting projects that I've had. This is a 26-foot sea skiff that came in. It needed new frames, new bottom, new planking. When we replank anything, rather than a butt joint, every joint is scarfed. We do a 10-to-1 scarf on the planks. These are marine plywood. It's a little bit tricky doing a scarf right on the boat itself. It's nice when you can take it off and put it on a table, but when you're on a boat, you've got to do what you got to do. It's got a new deck, new caulking seams, all the nice little extras. And then I've got another one that came in just like it. And as we were working on it, we scraping off the old paint, we found some lettering etched inside under the paint. And as we traced it out, it said Canoe Island Lodge. And we tracked it down. There's still a Canoe Island Lodge up on Lake George. And I contacted them. They're still in business. And they sent me a picture of there's the boat. In her heyday, maybe a little overloading. Yeah. So that's right. Yeah. They love it. Yeah. Lake George loves to overload. Sorry. And you know, that process is still ongoing. Here's a Chris-Craft that the owner said, I've got a Chris-Craft that needs repair. It's down on my lake house somewhere. I'll bring it to you. Well, when he went down there, he had found it had been sunk and underwater for about 3 or 4 months. When they brought it to me, the inside was full of hundreds of little and large catfish. So you can imagine it stunk. See, there's a fish right down there. They were even inside the cylinders of the engine. It was amazing. And after about a 2-year restoration, it's now a show winner. So that one came out okay. Here is a 1939 30-foot Alden design, Christensen built sloop. Did a full deck off restoration, traditional plank, Carvel planking with cotton caulking seams, new spars, new rigging, and again, that one came out real nice. This is a Herreshoff Rosinante, fairly famous. It used to be owned by a famous surveyor up in New England. And we pulled that apart. The floor timbers had come apart. A little bit of touch up here and there. It didn't like that. Sorry about that. And there she is. This was down in Little Washington, North Carolina. And if you might remember, she was named Emmy. Back in 2011, they had a little fire that took out two docks, including Emmy. Right now, this one, what was left of her, got shipped up to Iris and is being restored up there. Paul Kobel, see, I was stretching. Surveyor Paul Kobel originally owned that boat. Here's another interesting find. 1934 Dyer Dink. A guy bought it on eBay real cheap, brought it to me to clean it up a little bit. As we were sanding, we noticed a hint of the name Wasp underneath. So I did a little more research, contacted the Dyer company, and did a little bit looking around. And it was owned by a company, a family called the Wrigleys out of Chicago. And their big yacht was called the Wasp. And if you look back here, there she is, the tender back there. So after finding that out, we renamed her and redid it. And the guy turned around and sold it for quite a profit. So that was kind of nice. And those are kind of the wide variety of the boats we do. Now, let me go to slideshow from the beginning. Okay. When you're looking at runabouts, particularly the classic mahogany runabouts, most of them originally left the factory with a double planked bottom and plank and batten sides. There were some, the Centuries had a plank and batten bottom also. If we're redoing the bottom on that, we'll take out the plank and batten and go back with a double planked bottom. So if somebody says we've got a 5200 bottom, this is the process, this is what that means. Instead of an epoxy bottom or a 5200 bottom, back in the 80s, epoxy was everywhere and it seemed to work for the first 5 to 10 years, but now I'm replacing newly made epoxy bottoms with 5200 bottom, and this is how that works. This is that little, 15 and a half foot 1942. With a four-cylinder Chris-Craft B in it. Pull the engine out, do the engine work, pull everything off, roll the bottom. On the planking, we have, the outer planking that's fore and aft, and then inner planking, which is about 3/16 mahogany that's set at a 45-degree angle. Originally, between there, they put a bedding compound and canvas and screwed it all together. And it worked well for a number of years. And then after time, that bedding compound would wash out, the canvas would rot, it would expand and contract. All it's going to do, so you'd put it in at the beginning of the season, it would leak, but then the next day, it would still leak. So at that point, you need a new bottom. Usually they would leak for a day, but after that, they would swell up tight and you could use them. But there will come a time when they're not going to swell anymore, and that's when you need a new bottom. We have to pull out every one of these screws on a 15-footer. There's 2,400 screws just on the bottom. And some of them are so poor that you can just pull the planks and they'll come right off. Some are so the opposite. You have to drill and use extractors and chisels and whatever just to get each screw out. So you can see how time-consuming that is to get those out. This inner planking is so thin and so oil-soaked that it's pretty much trash. We pull all that off and basically throw away that inner planking. Once we've got the bottom off, all of these frames are usually so oil-soaked that they're not very useful. To change the oil, a lot of people just pull the drain plug, let it drain into the bilge, and it either dripped out through, or they would use the bilge pump to pump it out, and they would rock and roll from there. So everything in here is oil-soaked, and it's not going to hold adhesive. It's not going to hold a fastener very well. Sometimes you can clean it up and seal it. Most of the time, you have to replace it. So here we are realigning. It's also twisted and hogged and bent. We make sure that it's straight. When this boat came in from the factory, if you put a center line down the middle to one side and the other, it was about 1.25 inches off. And so those covering boards that go down either side, one side was this wide, one side was 1.25 inches wider. And that's the way they left the factory. So if we get them within 1/8 of an inch, we're doing pretty good. So here we have new white oak frames. It looks like some of these we were able to salvage, but see, there are some new ones. The stem and gripe and keel joint is always a problem. This one we've reinforced because that little stem has worn away, added on a new piece there. The inner planking that we use now is BS 1088 rated marine plywood. We use Marante wood instead of Akume. It's just much more rot resistant. Okay. And up front, where there's such a large curve at the stem, we have to cut those in small angles and force the curve into them. In the back, the boat's almost flat back here, so we can use full sheets. But up here, we have to individually bend those in. And when they're about 5 inches wide, you can force it in, and it'll bend right around there. Then on this, you see we've reused a lot of the original planking, and we do have some repairs and some new planks here, all out of mahogany. And when we put those together, we put them on and dry fit them. Then we take each one off, batter it with 5200, use a notch trowel and really lay it on there thick, screw it down and put all the screws in. And then it, once it cures, it's pretty darn bulletproof. So at the end of the day, after three of us are just covered with 5200 and caulk and goop and we're exhausted, we bring a hose in and just hose all the water down, hose the wood down with water, and then cover it with a tarp so it stays soaked. And that water is going to do two things. It's going to expand the wood to a good position, and also polyurethane adhesives and polysulfide adhesives are moisture cured. So it's going to expand the wood, and then the moisture is going to cure the 5200. So when we come back the next day, or usually over the weekend, this is cured and pretty much hard and ready to go. And the inner planking is 4 millimeter. The outer planking is about 3/8 of an inch thick. So that's not a very thick bottom, but just by tapping on it, it's rock solid. Not rock solid, but it's still flexible, but it's very strong. I know some of the customers, against our warnings, use their boats with dry stacks, and they pick them up with the forks and throw them in the dry stack, and so far they're holding up with that 5200 bottom. So it's really good stuff. Yes, sir. No. At this point, this is a solid composite bottom. If we had, if they didn't take care of it and it rotted from the inside, or they hit something and it damaged the outside, now we're basically repairing a composite or a, cold molded. If we needed to replace a plank, we would have to route it out, or, route it out from the inside. So yeah, repairing it from this point on is now difficult. That's a good point. Now, from the chine to the keel is 5200. But from the chine to the shear is still original plank and batten construction, single planked. And what we do, we pretty much have to pull off every plank and rehang them. A lot of the battens behind the plank, behind the screws, are split. And the scantlings on these boats are very small. They were made just strong enough to last about 10 years. And every frame we get is cracked. So what we do is, when we are rehanging these, we will bed those planks in a mahogany colored polysulfide caulk. So on the sides, if we have to pull these off, and we occasionally do, because usually when you run it into the dock, it's going to be right there, you can pull these off and repair them. If we use 5200, again, we'd be cutting it off instead of removing it. Yes. We're using silicon bronze. 90% of the time, we're using silicon bronze. Let's see if I can go back. On here, we line each frame with 5200 adhesive, and then we use bronze ring nails to tack that down. When we started off, we screwed the inner layer down, but we found when we were putting the outer screws on, we're still going on that thin frame. You've got a big screw trying to go in the place where a big screw is. You're either going to split the wood, or you're going to hit that screw and you've got to pull it out and move it. So we use ring nails down here, just small 14-gauge ring nails to put that on. And then to put this on, we're using probably number 8s by 1 inch silicon bronze screws. I do have a couple of boats that come to me that somebody else has restored, or some of the modern, I'm calling them modern, 1980s vintage, Grand Craft, Hacker Craft, have been made with stainless. And rather than redoing everything, I just go back in with stainless. So it's not ideal, but it's at least all similar metals inside there. And quite frankly, this boat is not going to sit in salt water. It's going to sit on a trailer, and it's going to get oxygen. It's not going to really be a problem. You know, it might last 80 years instead of 85 years, but we like to keep it silicon bronze as much as possible. The for the wood screws, they're not a problem. Where we're having trouble is getting larger bolts. You know, there's a lot of the joints and the engine stringers are put together with long carriage bolts, and they're harder to get. They're more expensive, and the imports, sometimes the threads aren't just right, so it's getting a little harder. But for the wood screws themselves, we've got a good source for those. Okay, we're painting. Again, pulling the sides off, rehanging those. And each screw has to go back in with a bung. Lots of sanding. Stain it. The only reason we would stain these is to make it look like it's a Chris-Craft. Chris-Craft had this mahogany-colored stain, and if you take your boat to a boat show and line it up with all the Chris-Crafts, it should look the same. Lyman has their own stain. Century, whoever, they had their own slight variation of a mahogany stain, and we stain it with the Chris-Craft color, and that's kind of what they expect. It's not the best look. It pretty much hides a lot of the grain, in my opinion. You know, if you go to an antique wooden boat show, you see a lot of brown boats. You don't see a lot of wood. But that's why we do that. And then we build up 12 to 14 coats of varnish, all done by brush. Here's repairing the deck structure. This one was pretty good, but a lot of these battens here were split. We'll either glue them back together or replace them. A lot of bungs. And then we mask, after the varnish is done, that's when we add in the cock stripes. We'll mask it off and lay in a white polysulfide cock. And then we cure it and then install all the interior fittings. More varnish and the final touches with the gold leaf. Any questions about that process? Yes, Kenny.
I noticed you have some younger people working for you. Where did you get the accountant?
That is a really interesting question. I can't find boat builders that will build a boat the way I want to do it. I can't find carpenters that can get away from square and plumb, you know, because nothing is square and plumb. It's all bent. And I have just been pure lucky to get people that know nothing about boats but want to work and can handle tools. And I teach them. I've got three of them that are all right about at that 30-year-old age. And, you know, they've been with me for 10, 12 years. And hopefully in about 5 years, one of them will buy the business from me. but it's, I've been just very lucky. Right now, they're back at the shop working, and I'm up here with you guys. So I have had some interns come down from IRIS or the Cape Fear Community College, and that's great, but they're looking for something else. You know, I think, you know, when you have a picture of somebody building a boat, you think of somebody with a bunch of nice shaved sawdust all around, and you're going to be using a hand plane, and it's going to smell like cedar, and it's going to be great the whole time. But when you're scraping out thousands of dead catfish and you're scraping bottoms. And, you know, the reality is we really don't do painting and varnishing. We do sanding with this much painting and varnishing. You know, so as far as employees, the schools are doing a great job of training them, but I think they're almost training them to be their own boat builders rather than workers. Sir.
Beautiful work.
Thanks.
I would imagine like that little skiff probably came to you on a trailer, towed by an owner, car full of cash.
Right.
So my question would be, without, you know, getting asking too much,
yeah,
how does something like that run?
That is a good question. And I've got, in my next thing, we'll talk about values of these boats. But just about every restoration I do, the repair cost, the restoration cost is going to be a lot more than the market value of that boat. So you've got to really love this boat. And the boat that we call the fish boat was originally the grandfather's boat, and the grandson was fixing it up for his grandson. So that, those are the customers we want to see. And we do see a lot of those. And then we see the guys that, oh, I bought this on eBay for $200. I figure, you know, a couple $100 and I'll have a nice boat. And, you know, when you say, no, it'll be $10,000 for this little one. And then you're off and running. But the costs are, most of those restorations in the 15 to 20 foot range are in the $30,000 to $50,000 range.
And do you do that by the hour?
Right. And that's the hardest part of my business, is to tell people, I don't know how much it's going to cost. And I charge by the hour plus materials. And every month I'm going to send you a bill, and it's going to be a lot. I literally sent one out yesterday, and I called the owner and I said, be sitting down when you get this one. This is going to hurt. And he said, great, that means we're working and it's going to be fun. So that's kind of the fun part. Yeah, Ken? That's a good question. We can talk about that. That would be good. I'm fortunately that I'm in, or what used to be called, the furniture capital of the world in the High Point, North Carolina area. All the furniture manufacturers were there, so the infrastructure of shipping mahogany in is still there. So I can go down to this old warehouse and say, you know, let me have some of this Brazilian mahogany that nobody can get anymore, or something like that. I'm running out of that, and I'm having to shift over to either Sapele or Kaya, which is a very similar, it's an African mahogany, and they look pretty good. It takes a little bit different staining techniques to make a match, but I've got white oak in my backyard, so the two major woods that we use are mahogany and white oak, and Atlantic white cedar, which is coastal Carolinas. So we're still okay for most of it.
When you restore something like this, the old question is, do you use current standards?
That is another fine line that I have to walk. I do the best I can. My wiring and fuel, I do to ABYC standards. Just as a matter of fact, I don't give them the option. Pretty much all of the pre-war boats that I get are horrible as far as safety. No ventilation, no overcurrent protection whatsoever. Not even the fuses under the dash. You know, they figured that the the wires would burn and break, and that, there's your fuse. You know, so, and another thing they used is the copper fuel line that runs from the tank in the back to the engine was the ground conductor. So you've got a stern light, and some of them even had a fuel float, a fuel sender, and they would send one wire down to the stern light, and the copper fuel line was your ground. Which, you know, it worked for whatever, most of the time. It worked for about 50 years, but yeah. But we still, but we do all that. Some of the, like I've got a 1939 barrel back in the shop right now, and it only has intake vents to feed air to the engine. There's no exhaust venting whatsoever. I need to have another set on the back, and then, you know, powered exhaust and passive, you know, ventilation. If the owner will let me do that, if he's not going to, you know, show it and he'll get points off, then I do that. But if they say, no, this is for show, then, you know, I kind of have to do what they say. But at least the wiring and the fuel and as much as I can is going to be up to standards. Well, it's, you know, I've got this contract that it used to be a paragraph. Now it's four pages. And hopefully my lawyer has it in there, you know. So far, I've been okay. Yeah, that's kind of, you know, the keeping originality is a term that we put in there. Yes, sir. Every boat I have that I do, except for some of the 1980 versions, have lead paint in it. So we treat everything. You know, we stop testing. You know, is the bottom of that lead? Well, yes. And the putty that went between it, the filler putty, all had lead in it. That's why it lasts 80 years. It's great stuff. And then around the exhaust, it's all asbestos, all sorts of stuff. So when we're stripping it, we have plastic sheets. We're covered up. We scrape it, we fold it up, and we have a bin in the back, and once a month they come and take our stuff. We just put that as part of doing business. And when I get a new employee, I say, everything in here, from the wood dust to everything, is toxic. And, you know, we used to just run things through the sander or through the planer or whatever and not get covered up with a mask. And now we're finding that the wood dust, the things that make boat building wood good for boat building, is a toxic inside the wood that keeps the rot out. Well, those toxics are, you know, they kill their biocides, basically, that kill life. So we don't want to kill life when we're sanding. So we just have to treat everything like it's toxic. I don't always do that. You know, sometimes you go, oh, and then you realize you've got something on you. I think, see, 5,200 on my brand new pants. You know, you got to do what you got to do. But yeah, that's a good question. Everything is toxic and bad. Okay, sorry. I can talk forever on this thing, so don't get me going here. Okay, let's actually talk about surveying. No, slideshow from the beginning. Okay. This is my first PowerPoint presentation. So, the two main types of construction are plank and batten, and I talked about it, but I just want to make sure everybody's kind of clear what that is. It's plank and batten, kind of looks like Carvel planking, where the planks are butted together and it's a smooth side. But the planks themselves are about 3/8 of an inch thick. And on the joint, there's another thin batten behind it that they're screwed to. So, you know, on the frames, you've got big screws going in vertically, but little screws attaching them to the planks and the battens holding that together. So they're fairly fragile boats. Again, the bottom, you can see we've got a double planked bottom with 5200, and then the sides are single planked plank and batten. And lap strake, of course. Steam bent oak frames. Sometimes if we can't get a new steam bent frame in properly and we only have to do a few, we will laminate them, slice up the oak real thin, cover the place with plastic, glue them all up, bend them in place, screw it down, come back the next day when it's cured, pull them out, clean them up. You can put a nice routed edge on it, make it really nice, and then screw it in permanently. The planks, we will do a scarf joint. In construction of lap strake boats, particularly with solid planking, solid lumber rather than plywood, a butt block and a butt joint is it's a good joint. I mean, if you look at Carville plank boats, there are butt blocks in the bilge and they've lasted for hundreds of years. So it works okay. But in our shop, we do a scarf on each side and then a scarf on the new piece. I don't know if you can see here. This is the transom. So this, we only had to do one scarf. We're coming off the end here. This will be a 10-to-1 scarf. And then along the joint, we will have 5200 here and epoxy here. The direction, since we're gluing it, the direction doesn't really matter. Originally on Lyman's, they had a lot of their scarves aiming in what would look like the wrong direction. So when the old Resorcinol glue that they used wears out and cracks and breaks, you basically got a scoop that's shoving water right in. So that's how you tell when your scarf is bad. So we use West System epoxy. We don't use a lot of epoxy. We pretty much just use it for gluing. I might go through 2 or 3 gallons a year in my shop instead of, you know, 50 gallons drums. So those are the two main types of construction that we see. Right now I have about 3 cold molded boats in the shop. And I've got a couple of strip plank boats in the shop. I've got some strip plank boats that have been canvassed and some that are a real fine bead and cove that are not canvas, they're just dry. You just put them in and let them soak and there you go. Kind of interesting. Here are the tools that I use. You've got to have a flashlight, and when you're looking for flashlights, there's never one that's too bright. You know, when you're, oh, that one's too bright. I always find looking in the bilge, even during the day, if it's really bright here and you're trying to look in the bilge and you've got a really bright flashlight, you know, it needs to be bright as the sun. Small hammer for beating on things. I use my slotted screwdriver for just about everything. You see, I don't have ice pick on here. I spelt Phillips wrong. An ice pick, if you're poking around on a wooden boat with an ice pick, it'll go through just about any wood, even a brand new wood. So don't use an ice pick for that. I use a slotted screwdriver, and you can go with the grain or against the grain and kind of try different things. You can put it between planks and pry. You can use the back end as your hammer for tapping. So that slotted screwdriver is my main tool. Phillips screwdriver, the floorboards are going to be screwed down in most boats. And either you've got to have somebody pull them out or you've got to pull them out yourself to get in there and look. I kind of stopped worrying about, you know, I don't do that kind of thing. I've just figured that if I'm going to do a good survey, I'm going to have to pull these floorboards out because the owner's not going to do it. The hard part is when you get a boat where they put the floorboards down, screwed them down, and then put vinyl or whatever over it. Then you've got, you know, you've got to do some destructive unscrewing. But there's really no way to look at these properly if you don't remove some of the floorboards, if not all of them, maybe some of the ceiling boards so you can get to that chine. And if you're working on a boat that has bronze screws, you're going to need a Frearson screwdriver. Does anybody know what a Frearson screwdriver is? Yes. It's the first talk where somebody knew that. Here's you're going to need to write this down so you can use it at a party if you want to. A Frearson screwdriver looks just like a Phillips screwdriver, but all of the bronze screws are not Phillips. They look like it, but they're actually Frearson. Or sometimes Reed and Prince, it's called. Okay, it's a microscopic difference, but if you don't have the right one, the bit won't fit in there and it'll strip. So if it's, you know, a drywall screw or stainless, it's going to be Phillips. If it's bronze, it's going to be either slotted or Frearson. And you can get, you know, the little drill bit tips and put on in your power driver or a little hand thing. Yes. What? I pull fasteners. Yes. Because this is what I do for a living and I know how to pull them and put them back in and plug them and all that, I pull them. If I'm doing a museum piece and the builder's standing right next to the owner and the, you know, all this people, I'll say, I need you to pull all of these down this line and all of these down this line and let them do it. But if it's, you know, go down to the coast and do this boat, I've got to pull them. And then, you know, work with whoever to either refill them or what.
Mm-hmm. Throughout the boat, but I noticed you just said you're looking at one frame all the way down.
I like to look at, well, yes. You always pull something along the garboard. You could probably pull every garboard plank, and that was going to need to be refastened. And then I will usually say, okay, now on the inside, this is where the water heater is, and that's always going to be a mess. So let's pull this line here. And then, you know, let's get something before, in front of it and behind it. So I usually do not a line, but like, let's get a water line, turn of the bilge, underneath, maybe four or five, depending on, you know, if it's a big boat. Right, exactly. Yeah, and those places where you know stuff is happening. Yeah. Yeah, and you can, depending on the job, you can, you know, take a picture with, you know, little blue masking tape on it when you go, okay, these are, you know, we did 12 on each side and they all look great except for this one. Okay, this is the inside of a, it's a little dark, but I guess you can see it. The inside of a runabout, and it's just about from a 15-footer to a 30-footer, they're pretty much constructed all the same. Here's the keel going up to the stem. The gripe is here. This is the lifting eye fitting. Your mainframe's here, your futtock, and your chine right here. The joint of the keel, stem, and gripe, they usually had a separate gripe, and before 5200 or anything, the sealant between those joints was that peanut butter-like bedding compound with canvas in it, and that's going to leak. Usually, I think the keel, see, the gripe is here, this piece. Here's the, you can see the seam of the stem, and then this is the gripe, and then somewhere right in here, the keel comes along and lays on top of it and then ends here, and there's a stop water right in the rabbet of each one. Those are going to leak. So you could get a leak in this joint, and it's going to run down here and show up down here. They're bolted together. You see these bolts in here? Most of the time on any of those bolts, you could just reach in there and spin them with your hand. They're going to be that loose. Because they put them down with a washer and a lock washer and all that expansion contraction, and you can see that it's loosened up. You can also see that this is not new. This is all, that's oil. So, you know, it's pretty nasty. See these screws right here, right on the keel? That's the gripe joint. That's a good place to check. The lifting eye, it's got to lift that whole boat. There's one in the front, one in the back. Again, check those fasteners. A lot of times this board will either be rotted or split or cracked. But make sure you're checking the structure. Here's about midships. Floorboards would come in under here. The ceiling boards would come down here. To connect this frame with this vertical futtock, and here's the chine, there's one bolt here. So it's basically pivoting. It's not really holding it very, very stiff. Check that a lot of times, because there's only one, it'll split this wood. Also, if you notice the chine, the top of the chine, and this is a design flaw that I've seen on just about all of the boats, it angles back. So you've got water, when you get water in there, not if, but when you get water in there, it's going to sit there. And a lot of times you don't see it until it's already rotted through the outside. And you go, I got some staining on the outside. When you put your finger through it, you can see that it's, you know, they didn't clean out the boat at the end of the season, and water and junk just sat there. Another thing to look at when you're in there, if there's dirt or mud on top of those battens, that tells you that that boat has been on the bottom. And a lot of these with the original bottom, you know, you think you've got it okay, and you've got the bilge pump and the battery, and you go back and come back next weekend, and it's on the bottom. Well, you know, somebody unplugged the thing, or the power went out and the bilge pump didn't keep up, and there you go. So look on top of each batten for any kind of mud or whatever. Here's the aft running gear. Again, just about all of these are going to be built the same. Here's your engine stringers, fuel tank, rudder post. There should be some kind of safety on top. They're all different. This one has a little collar that's tied down. Here's your rudder post stuffing box, only two bolts on it. Again, that's going to be real loose. And because that's way behind the seat, and under the tank, it's hard to get to. So the owner's not going to adjust that. He's just going to wonder why it's still leaking. This is where your prop strut is. Four bolts here and a big doubler, big chunk of oak that connects these two together to take up some of that sideways force. A lot of times if you look at these bolts and you see that they've been tightened and tightened and they keep, you know, digging down, or that split or rotted, you're going to see a lot of movement in that strut. And, oh yeah, it's always vibrated. Yeah, just tighten that up and keep going, okay? If you look, the exhaust hose, the fuel line, all of this rudder linkage, this is the big, it's just a metal pipe that goes back to the tiller arm. It's real tight in there, and you've got to make sure that nothing's rubbing. A lot of times I'll find that the exhaust hose has worn through. It's spurting water up, and you know, it's kind of a mess. Oh, there you go. Well, I've got this here. Limber holes should be cleaned. They do have them in there. They're little tiny ones, and they're just big enough. But if the boat is taken care of properly, you know, at the end of the season, cleaned out and vacuumed out, those should be nice and clean. So keep an eye on, make sure all of those limber holes are clean all the way through. The running gear from the outside on a trailer boat is real easy to get to. You've got the strut, back up, this button. There's the strut and the bolts. You can see that there's a little wedge put under there. I see that a lot where they've just had to put something in there to make that line up just right. The rudder post, a lot of times I'll see that the, just from movement and wear, they've just kept tightening and tightening that nut, those carriage bolts, and they're sucked way up into the wood, and there shouldn't be too much play in there, in that rudder. And it's real easy to see the cutlass bearing. You can just get in there with a flashlight and see this one here. You can see that there's, on the other side, it's tight and squished, but here you could, you know, slip a dollar bill through there. So there's a little bit of misalignment on that, and it's real easy to see the front side and the back side to look at that cutlass bearing. The engines are another whole thing. We see a lot of basically flathead six. It's the Chris-Craft K or the Gray Marine six-cylinder engines. They're, you know, a little four-cylinder or a six-cylinder will weigh 1,000 pounds. It's a lot of cast iron, which is why it still is running. But again, there's nothing safe about it. The wiring is horrible. It's not a marine fuel pump. It's not a marine carburetor. It does have a backfire flamer arrestor on it, but a lot of them are side draft, and you know, it'll just, if it floods, it'll just pour gas into the bilge. So, so there you go. Okay, I've got a couple of resources for you. You can Google boats, and you'll get tons of stuff. Almost too much. But if I have a boat and I want to know how much does, you know, how much should this, if it's fully restored, what's a good value for it? These are the guys that buy and sell these things every day. The Antique Boat Center out of Cincinnati, they don't always house all the boats there, but they have probably one of the best websites where you can look on there and say, you know, how much is a 1960 century? Same thing, Carolina Classic Boats down in South Carolina, Wooden Boat Magazine. They have more sail and rowing craft. Plus a lot of great resources. If you have a, if you've got a named boat, like Correct Craft, Riva, or whatever, there's a certain history, and you know that there are people behind it. But if you've got a boat that kind of looks like this, but it's kind of like this, and you don't know what it is, there's no number on it, that's when it gets hard. And that's when you can contact some of these people and talk to them and send them pictures and say, you know, this was a Chris Craft kit boat, or this was, you know, Fred made one from his uncle's Chris Craft, you know, that kind of thing. The folks at Wooden Boat are really good at tracking things down like that. Also, a lot of the curators of the coastal maritime museums are really good at tracking down those odd boats. And another one, Mitch LaPointe up in the Midwest, has another source, kind of like the Antique Boat Center, where if you're trying to find you know, some comps of a routine boat, you're okay. And as far as books, Jerry Conrad put together the Chris Craft is the only boat company. Of course, they were kind of like the Chevy of boats. Everybody had one, and they were everywhere, and they built thousands of them. And every one of them has a hull number, and every one of them you can track down. They kept records of who bought every single boat. So if you want to know, I've got hull number, you know, S17-135, you can call the museum and say, give me the original hull card for that boat, and you say that it was sold to somebody in St. Louis, and it had red upholstery, and it had this color bottom, and it has exactly everything that went with it. So that's a good, really great resource. And then there's a series of boats, five whole volumes by Bob Speltz, and that has details on all of the other weird boats that are out there. After the war, when they were starting to really use aluminum for everything and this new thing called plywood, they said, well, let's make a boat out of it. So boat builders popped up everywhere through the mid-50s and mid-60s. So you can find these little plywood skiffs and cruisers and everything all over the place, and they'll, you know, be in business for 5 years and then disappear, but there'll be some kind of mention of them inside those in those books. So as far as value, I didn't want to put this in writing, but for runabouts, you know, the typical 15-foot, 17-foot, up to about 25-foot, I have found that a base price is about $1,000 a foot. You know, I've got a 63, 17-foot ski boat. Well, I'll start at about 17 grand. It's got the old original engine and the old bottom, and it leaks a lot. Well, okay, then you minus that. It's got a new 5,200 bottom. Okay, now you're going to be adding 10, 15,000 to that. Or a new engine or something you can add to it. But I've just found, you know, you can, just as a starting point. Any questions?
If you're doing, if somebody brings a boat to you and they want it restored to original condition, are you still using the 5,200 or?
If they say original, and they want the original bottom, and they're willing, and you understand you're gonna have to soak this every year, you can't trailer it, you know, then yes, I will do that original canvas bottom with the dolphinite and everything. Yeah, maybe 10% of my customers do that. I try to discourage them because, you know, they want to put it in a trailer, take it to the lake, drop it in, go, come back, and then use it again next year. Yes, yes, I've done that too. Again, there's really, Right. And actually, right about 1958, Chris Craft and the other builders moved from the solid lumber to plywood inside. So I don't see an advantage to having the mahogany on mahogany, because that's going to want to expand and contract. This is going to want, you know, so if you've got dimensionally stable plywood under there, it's just going to be better. Again, I have seen some, and I've done this, but it's kind of cheating. Take your plywood, and then I'll score it with those angled lines. So when you look in, you see, you know, the lines, so it looks original. But, you know, boat owners are a little bit weird, as you know. You know. Okay. Well, I will leave some cards, and as if you get a call and you have some questions, I would not turn them down. I would say, yeah, I'd like to do that. And before you go, call me and I'll talk you through it a little bit and try to get you through that. All right. Well, thank you very much.